Right, promises of God. And last time we were looking at what kind of promises. Okay, we did that a couple of weeks ago concerning nature, God's design. He's in control. He set laws in place. Things are not going to happen apart from His guidance and His will. Yes, the promises to seekers. And what is that promise? If you seek, you will find. And if we seek Him, we will find Him. And that's kind of the basis of that. But there was some other things that we could seek. And there was negative things, like if we seek our own life, we're going to lose it. But the general principle, you find what you're looking for. Tonight, we're going to look at promises for the laborer. And I'm not going to go into all of the different words in the Bible that talk about labor or work, but as I looked at those, it was interesting that within those definitions, it wasn't just about accomplishing something or putting your hand to do something, but it also accompanied this aspect of misery, weariness, tiredness, being worn out or wore down. It's something that I didn't really expect. I know that's the way we oftentimes think of work. In the world today, work is kind of a dirty word. It carries with it just that idea of being hot, sweaty, dirty, and tired. And yet, most of that comes about not by God's design, but by our sinfulness. Work was designed by God. It was not something that came about because of sin, but even when God created Adam and Eve, placed them in the garden, He gives Adam a responsibility to name the animals as He brings them past. He gives him the responsibility to tend the garden, and that would have required work of some kind. It would have been a very fulfilling work. It would have been work that was accomplished within fellowship with God and would have been productive. But because of sin, toil entered in. Genesis 3, 17 and 18. Go ahead, verse 19. So we see a number of things there, that the ground is cursed, that in order to produce even enough to sustain life, it was going to require effort. It was going to be painful. There's thorns and thistles, and it doesn't matter what crop we plant, we get weeds. And wouldn't it be great if we could find some wonderful use for weeds? But as soon as we did, we would plant that weed, and what would we get? Something else. We get weeds, something we don't want in there. And so it's going to accomplish work. It's hard work. It's by the sweat of your face. And then it says this work is going to be accomplished till you return to the ground. And so it's a lifelong thing. And it makes life difficult. And we don't like difficulty, and oftentimes we shirk our responsibilities, we shirk our work, and that's not glorifying to God. Work is still a Christian principle. 2 Corinthians 3 and verse 10, that does not sound right. 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 10. Okay, we're going to be builders. Building is work. And then it later says that that work is going to become clear, for the day will reveal it. 1 Thessalonians 4:11. Okay, we are to be working with our own hands. And then Ephesians 4:28. Okay, we're to work so that we can be a blessing, that we can give. It's not just for our own benefit, but to be a benefit to others. We noted now there are some truths that carry a greater weight than a promise. And so I wanted to start with some of these realities Ecclesiastes 1:8, everything is filled with labor. And that's just a truth that you can examine different aspects of life, whether it's the raising up of children or trying to maintain a household or, you know, just anything we put our hand to, it requires more work. Everywhere we turn, there's going to be labor. Ecclesiastes 2:21. Okay. So all of our earthly things which we labor for, we're going to leave behind. We're going to pass them on to somebody else. And it's kind of irksome to the preacher there that he has worked so hard to build and to make this great nation and knows that he's going to be passing it on to another generation that didn't work for it. And we see so oftentimes that principle, if you didn't work for it, you don't appreciate it. If you didn't work for it, you don't know how to maintain it. And it's a grief. Everything we put our hands to is labor, and what little we get ahead in it, ultimately we're going to leave it behind to somebody that didn't work for it. Psalm 127, verse 1. Okay, I didn't see this as a promise, but a reality. That if we're laboring, we can be laboring according to the flesh. We can labor with all kinds of effort, but unless God blesses the labors, it's all empty. It's not going to last. It's certainly not going to endure for eternity. And so much of what we do doesn't endure even, you know, a short period of time. I was rather concerned the other night. We just put a part of the roof on the car's house, and then the storm comes up. It was calling for that derecho, and man, it's just going to blow all those shingles right off. They haven't had a time to really get seated down good. It's just going to blow that off, and we're going to be starting all over tomorrow. And there's so many things in life that are like that. I mean, you work hard, you hope that it's going to last, and something happens, and it's just like God blows on it, and it's gone. And so if God doesn't bless our labors, whatever those labors are, they ultimately are going to be vain. We make a distinction between the proverbs and promises, but there's a lot of principles here in the book of Proverbs about labor. Proverbs 10, verse 16. Okay, the labor of the righteous. And here I think labor is being used as a synonym with wages. It's what you're getting for your efforts. And the righteous promotes life. The wicked uses those wages for further sin. And it just reminds me of Dave Ramsey talking about, you know, money doesn't make the man, but it just demonstrates more of what he is. You know, if he's a good man, he'll do well with his money. If he's an evil man, he's going to do evil with his money. Money doesn't change that. And I think it is the fruit of our labors. The righteous tends to use that in a way that is beneficial. Life-giving, life-sustaining, a fullness of life, but the wicked uses it for sinful purposes and brings himself into judgment. Proverbs 12, 24. Okay, so here we have the hand of the diligent will rule. And again, it's set in contrast. And so this aspect of labor, the general principle is if you work, you're not going to be dependent. And of course, in that era, that economy, if you couldn't supply your needs, you had to sell yourself, and then you were forced into labor. And so we wouldn't have this business of everybody sitting around on their video games and collecting other people's money. They would have been forced into labor, or else they would have starved. And so the idea of being diligent keeps you from being dependent or indentured. Proverbs 13, verse 11. Okay, again, we get these comparisons. Dishonest gain and gain by labor, which is honest work. But a general principle that is presented there is if you work at something, you're going to increase in it, right? So I go out with a bucket and I start picking up stones out of the field. I'm laboring. By the end of the day, am I going to have more rocks or less rocks than I started the day with? There'll be less rocks in the field, but I will have more rocks, right? I've collected them. So as I put forth my labors, I'm moving in a positive direction. Proverbs 14:23. Okay, again, this aspect of labor leading to profit, labor leading to toward a positive end, a goal, a purpose, compared to idleness and how easy it is to spend time sitting around talking. We could talk about work. I've seen a lot of guys do that and stand around and discuss the thing until hours have passed and nothing's gotten done. But if you put your body to the labor, things begin to get accomplished. Proverbs 6, verses 9 through 11. Okay, the absence of work leads to poverty. And that's a pretty common situation. These are principles, general principles, observed in the natural world. They are also God's design. But there are things that enter into life that sometimes produce a different result. You have a government that steps in and hands somebody a check. Well, then their absence of labor didn't lead them to poverty. They're sitting there with all of their needs met. So we see these general principles, and we're going to notice that many of these things are going to be brought out again in aspects of promises. I have special promises to Israel. Deuteronomy chapter 15 and verse 18. Israel had special obligations to their fellow Israelites. If somebody fell into poverty and they needed to sell their land, or it was a temporary situation, but they would sell that land and enter into indentured servitude. And that indentured servitude was according to a certain number of years, and there was a year of jubilee or a year of release. And sometimes people didn't really want to take on the responsibility of a hired hand who wasn't going to really produce enough. And in releasing them, they were also obligated to make sure that they were set up enough to continue on. It wasn't like, you know, you're only paying them enough to feed and house them for the time that they're working for you, but to set them back on their feet again. And this was an expensive endeavor, but if they would be obedient to God and have generous hearts towards one another, God's promise for His people Israel was that God would bless what they would do. That if you put yourself out and take one of these poor individuals in and care for them and get them back on their feet the way that they need to be, ultimately God is going to bless you. Deuteronomy 28 and verses 8 through 12. Mm-hmm. Okay. So God's promise was, if you're going to be obedient, He's going to bless the work of their hands. And agricultural society, that also included the weather and the fertility of the earth and so forth. But the work of their hands would be blessed if they would continue in obedience to God's laws. In later here in verses 15, 20, and 33, we see the opposite being true. Okay, so if you are not following God's commandments, not seeking Him, He's going to curse everything you put your hand to, and the labors that you extend are going to be devoured up by another nation. And so those are promises that God had given to his people Israel. Isaiah 32 and verse 20, this is a period of time when they have experienced the curses that God had placed on them, and they were under his judgment. Isaiah 32:20. Okay, and the promise there being that there would be a day of restoration. And in that day of restoration, God would pour out his blessing once again, and the work of their hands would be fruitful again. Amos 9 and verse 13. Okay, what a wonderful problem to have as a farmer, to have such a big harvest that you're running into the planting season before you can get it all out. And so we see that in one sense, Israel did receive God's blessing when they went back into the land, but the fullness of these promises have not yet been accomplished. There's not really been a time when the land has been that fruitful. And yet that is a promise that when Jesus Christ comes again and he's ruling and reigning on earth, he's going to pour out a blessing upon his people, and those things will be characteristically true. Psalm 128 and verse 2. Okay, when you eat the labor of your hands or the fruit of your labor, my version says that you will be happy and it shall be well with you. And this is a blessing upon the righteous, a promise for those that are righteous, seeking after God, that we can approach our labor with joy. Sadly, you know, too often people get very grumpy and upset at labor, but really, as Christians, we're able to approach that labor from a completely different perspective. And we'll see that as we get to the end of our study tonight, but it's what is done for Christ. What's our attitude going into it? Who are we working for? And when we realize that the labor is what God has given us to do, then we can approach it with joy, and we can receive joy from that. Job 4 and verse 8, okay, if you work hard at something, you're going to reap the benefits or the detriments of it. If you're working hard at sowing wickedness in your life, you're going to reap the judgment. You'll reap the whirlwind. And so, again, a principle that is laid out there. But God's designed work that way, that we should receive according to what we do. Psalm 125, verses 5 and 6. Yeah, this is a psalm that's looking at the return to Israel. And there's a certain aspect of returning to the blessing of God, that they had been out of the land for 70 years and they've come back and the land has gone fallow for all of that time. What happens when you leave a field? You've plowed it up and maybe you had a crop on it, but you weren't able to maintain it year after year after year. That gets erosion. You get ditches. You get weeds, more weeds than you do if you just keep on top of your work. And notice that in the garden. The better we weed the year before, the less weeds we'll have the year after. But you allow it to go to seed, then you've got more work for yourself. And so they're coming back, and they're still in grief because of all of the labor that is in front of them, but at the same time, they're entering back into God's blessing. The work is going to be worth it. God is going to bring a harvest for them. And it is also, I think, picturesque of the fact that they were coming back repentant. They're broken because of their sin. They've suffered judgment, and they're grieving, but they're returning to a joyful time. Unpleasant labors produce joyful results. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 27. He will repay each person according to what he has done. And that is a repeated idea, according to what he has done. That's going to be heard in one way or another, but it is a promise of reward for labor. 1 Corinthians 3:8, again, according to his own labor. And I think oftentimes when we make this transition from Old Testament to New Testament on this topic, we move mentally from physical labor to spiritual labor. And there's some of that, but I think we're going to see in some of these verses that it's not that clear of a distinction. But this passage certainly is talking about spiritual labor, building upon what foundation has been laid for us. And as we do that, it will be according to the effort that we've put into it. 1 Corinthians 3:13. I think maybe we already read this one once. Okay, we have the promise here that everyone's work is going to become evident. For the believer, as we stand before the judgment seat, it is the work that is done for Christ. In God's justice, all of our sin has been dealt with in Jesus Christ. In God's justice, all work that is done for Him has to be rewarded. That's the kind of the two sides of God's justice. Evil has to be punished, right has to be rewarded. And so it will be revealed. It may be done in secret, as Christ tells His disciples to go into their closets to pray. It's not for the benefit of great audiences, but oftentimes great spiritual work is done in private. But don't worry about that. We saw that this morning. Our tendency is pride. We want somebody to pat us on the back. You're doing a good job. You did the right thing. You know, keep it up. We look for that too often. But the reality is that those spiritual works done in private will one day be rewarded and will be made known. It'll be seen. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Always abounding in the work of the Lord. It's not going to be in vain. How many of those athletes in the Olympics would be running if they didn't get some kind of a medal at the end? We were reading an article that each country treats their medalists differently. Most countries pay. If they get a gold medal or a silver medal, they get a different pay scale. If you medal, you got paid. So these athletes are striving. They are placing themselves under extreme discipline and a lot of hard work striving for this reward. And how many of them go home empty-handed? If you didn't medal, sorry. There was some nations that didn't pay. It's like all you get's the fake gold thing to hang around your neck. But it's a natural thing for us to desire a return for our efforts. We want to sense that there is purpose and meaning and accomplishment in the things that we do. And it's hard to keep doing those things when that isn't evident. And oftentimes spiritual work is that way. We just don't always see the benefits. We don't see the return in this life. And we're being encouraged here by this promise that whatever labors we do for Christ, it's not in vain. We do it for the Lord. It will be rewarded in its time. 2 Corinthians 9:6. Okay, I went ahead and put in some of these sowing verses because that was kind of the work, the labor of that day. For the most part, it was the illustration that would be used. And so we talk about labor, it's the farmer that goes out to sow his seed. And so another principle, another promise, if you labor bountifully, if you put a lot of effort into your witnessing and your walk with the Lord, there's going to be a greater reward. The fewer seeds you put in the ground, the smaller the harvest is going to be. The more seeds you put out there, the more harvest. I mean, not every seed is going to germinate. Not every seed that germinates is going to come to full growth. It just reminds us of that parable of the sower, where he goes out to sow, and some of it falls on the pathway, and some of it on stony ground, and some of it's choked out by weeds. And we've got to be encouraged that as we are going out with the gospel, it is going to produce according to the will of God. His word never goes out void. It will accomplish what he sends it to do. And if we sow much, the promise is that we're also going to receive much in harvest. But if we sow sparingly, we're not going to receive much in harvest. Ephesians 6, 7, and 8. Okay, the context there is the bondservants and their master's relationship, and they're encouraged even as slaves that their approach to their work, if they do the menial tasks and submit themselves to their master and do what they're told to do with a joyful spirit as unto the Lord, then even those temporal tasks become eternally rewarded. He receives a good reward. And this is something that we sometimes struggle with realizing. Sometimes we look at our life and we just see all of these menial tasks and so much time spent in cleaning house and fixing meals and going to work, maybe on a assembly line or something, or you're spending all kinds of time in the tractor and you're not around people, and so there's no great opportunity for the gospel, and you feel like you're not accomplishing any kind of spiritual work. But the reality is, whatever it is that we do is the job that God has given us to do that day. And we do that with a right heart, and we do it for the Lord. It is a spiritual service. That book that I've been reading, and it just went out of my mind what the name of it was, but I think it was by Tozer. He had a whole chapter in there about the fact that there is no common place for the Christian. There's no sacred place. I mean, there's no aspect of coming to a location in order to do spiritual service. You don't come to the church to be spiritual. You don't just come to the church to minister. But everything you do as a Christian, everywhere you go, is a spiritual place. It is a spiritual work if you do it in the right heart attitude. Right. Yep. And it's that the service is the obedience to Christ. And that could be witnessing. It could be any other number of things. Just, you know, speaking truth to a situation is being a testimony. And we don't have control over the harvest. We just have the opportunity. Years ago, I said that we don't get to catch the fish, we just get to cast the net. We have no control over what fish come back in the net. And are we being faithful in casting the net? And in being obedient in each of those situations will bring its reward accordingly. So we leave the results up to the Lord. Philippians 1:22. You say Paul was looking at the possibility of the end of his life and going to heaven, and what a wonderful thing that would be. But the reality is, if I stay here and I labor on for Christ, I'm just making more rewards for heaven. There's going to be a greater payoff. If I labor, I will bear fruit. That's the promise. And it's like you were saying, it's not necessarily that you're going to see scores of people come to know Christ. You may not see any, but it is still bearing fruit. It's the Spirit of God working in us, and it is an eternal laying up treasures eternally in heaven. Galatians 6, 7, and 8. Okay. And these, we're running out of time here, but these verses are mainly repeats. Isn't that so important to us? These are precious promises. These are the promises that help us to be conformed to the image of Christ as we grasp onto these things. And he repeats this aspect of reward for labor over and over and over and over. Your labor is not going to be forgotten. It goes before you. It will be rewarded. And you will reap what you sow. We see that again in Colossians 3:23. The work done as to the Lord receives eternal reward. Hebrews 6:10, God will not forget your labor. Revelation 14:13, their works will follow them. And then Matthew 11:28. This one's just a little different, okay, because that words for labor involved exhaustion and misery. But at the same time, the promise is if we come to our Savior, He will give us rest. We're no longer laboring for our salvation. We're no longer carrying that burden. He's removed that. And as we labor for Him, His yoke is easy, His burden is light, and He will give us rest. Mike, can I get you to close in prayer?